We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between two and five players to fill out your pick'em slip. Get every pick right and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former WWF Women's Champion, believe it or not. Of course, legendary manager known as Harvey Whippleman in the WWF, but of course, you know him as Downtown Bruno. Bruno,
and how you don't forget this.
Oh, look at that. Nice. Hall of Fame. Yes.
Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame. Downtown Bruno, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. It ain't got cold yet, particularly here in North Mississippi, in the Memphis area. So I'm happy. It ain't as hot as I'd like it, but we ain't got the ice and snow yet. So that, as far as I'm concerned, it's a good day.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. I thought we were going to be getting some horrible weather, but hasn't been too bad as of yet. Thank God.
Where are y'all at?
Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, well, you get it before we do, and you get it worse than we do for a longer period of time, so I get that.
Oh, yeah. So what's going on in your world? What have you been up to?
I just, staying busy. You know, I do a lot of conventions. I do a lot of matches and special refereeing for Pro Wrestling Mid-South, which is a great organization here in this area. It's in Dyersburg, Tennessee, about an hour and a half north of Memphis. And I'm the senior official there, and You know, I did something for Bluff City Wrestling this past weekend in West Memphis, Arkansas, for a great promotion over there. And I'm an elected official here in DeSoto County, Mississippi. I'm on the Board of Aldermen here in Walls, Mississippi, which actually we have a meeting tomorrow night. So tonight was a good night for our thing, you and me. So, yeah, believe me, I stay busy. Stay busy.
Yeah, crazy. Busier than ever almost. You got so much going on right now. It's crazy.
Right, right. I'm not one to sit around. You know, I'd rather stay busy. And then in the evening, I unwind and I enjoy doing things like this. So this is great.
And sometimes see you on the Tales of the Territory on Vice. Sometimes we see you on there too, talking about the Polynesian Pro Territory.
Right. Yeah. My thing was, I never wanted to do the dark side of the ring type thing, because I don't like to be negative in life. Did bad things happen in our profession on occasion? Sure. That's any profession. I don't want to perpetuate it or add to it, let me say. But Tales of the Territories on Vice was the opposite. We were just talking about how it was in the various territories, because a lot of people nowadays that watch WWE and whatever else they watch, I'm not familiar with any other place, but I'm just saying, they don't understand. Maybe they're too young. Our business was comprised of territories. Each part of the country had their own regional territory for years and years and years before the business developed through cable TV and nowadays streaming and, of course, social media, internet, on and on and on. Every part of the country had their own territory, and that's all you saw in that part of the country was the territory that you lived in. So I think it was interesting for a lot of people to hear about these various organizations. And I was privileged to be a part of the Hawaii episode of Tales from the Territories.
How did you actually get out there, just originally get out there to Hawaii, even to be a part of that territory? It seems so like, you know, Memphis, Hawaii, it just seems so like literally on the other side of the world for you.
Yeah, it was a long swim. No, I'm going to get No, I'll tell you. I was in Kansas City with Rocky Johnson in, I'm the world's worst at this. I think it was 83. I'm pretty sure it was 1983. And he thought I was being underutilized there. And he said he was helping with the book, you know, doing the booking for the Mavias in Hawaii. Of course, he's part of the family, you know, married into the family. So he wanted to know whether I'd be interested in coming to that territory, to Hawaii. Let's see. I know it was January when I went out there, when I first went. Let's see, January in the Midwest or January in Honolulu. I mean, it wasn't much of a pulling teeth to get me to come there. So that's how I wound up in PPCW, Polynesian Pacific Championship Wrestling, because my dear friend, God bless his soul, Rocky Johnson.
Just crazy, that territory and like, look who went out there. Look who performed there. Even, like, WWF and NWA guys were on the same card together out there. It's like, wow, what an awesome territory it was at one point.
Oh, it was fantastic. Man, I was out there. It was Rocky Johnson, Jimmy Snuka, Kevin Sullivan, Jerry the King Lawler, my mentor, Rock and Roll Express, Lars Anderson. I know I'm leaving quite a few out, but I'm just saying there was just, that's just a small list of some of the, Mark Lewin was there when I was there. Just and a lot of guys were there when I wasn't there. Like, I was never there when Andre was there, but he came on at least one occasion, maybe several that I'm not sure. But yeah, a lot of guys, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, God bless his soul too, was over there. Just anybody and everybody.
Crazy. Flair went over there and defended the NWA title. So it's like everybody pretty much went over there.
Right. Right. And it was, I enjoyed my time over there, you know, and I worked in the office during the day because, you know, it wasn't that many places to have the matches. We didn't wrestle 5 nights a week, maybe 2 and 3 nights a week. So a lot of the guys that were in the territory that weren't, you know, mainstream guys, they had regular jobs or other jobs. Well, I was in the wrestling business, so I didn't have another job. I wasn't from there. So I had my other job was still in the wrestling business. I worked in the office all day long. And then the nights of the matches, I was, you know, at the events.
When you look at it, too, my events must have had so much respect, not only from the NWA, but from the McMahons, too, that it's like, okay, it's Dustin Flair on the card, but that's all right. We'll send Andre, and, you know, he's allowed to wrestle. So you're like, wow, what respect for them over there to allow that to happen.
Yes, I would have to agree, yes. And that was above my part of the business, let's say, who got booked and who didn't, why or whatever. But, yeah, I agree. And, I was part of that group, and I was very proud to be, and still to this day. And that led to this tremendous lifelong friendship I've got with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the people's champion.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the number one actor in the world, the number one entertainer in the world. Where did that relationship start? Was that over down in Memphis, or like when did you first meet Rocky?
Well, when I met Rocky Sr., you know, Rocky Johnson, Dwayne's dad, in Kansas City. And like I said, I think it was 83. And we were very close. And then when I ended up coming back home to Memphis, Rocky came shortly thereafter. Back to Memphis too. And as you know, if you watch Tales of the Territory, you know, circumstances led to Polynesian Pacific closing down. So we all had to have a place to go.
Yep.
Well, Rocky came to the Memphis Territory and asked me, would I give his son a place to live? Because Rocky had other arrangements for his personal life, which that's him. I know. Watch Young Rock on DVD or
yeah.
But that's when Dewey, which what I called him, still to this day call him Dewey, Dwayne The Rock, lived with me. We became best friends since then. That's when he was 14 years old. So that was damn near 40 years ago, like 36 years ago, 37 years ago. So that's how that all came about.
When you look at him, did you know he was going to be a wrestler? Not like, did you know he was going to be, you know, number one guy or anything, but did you know he was going to be a wrestler when he was a kid?
Not at that time. He didn't even express really an interest in it. He wanted to be a football player.
Right.
Which, again, you can look at Young Rock. Yes, it was a dramedy. There was a lot of comedy put in and whatnot, but it's all based on truth, and that's a fact. And, yeah, his aspiration at that time was to be in the NFL. So, no, I didn't see that at that time, but obviously it seemed to work out pretty well.
Yeah, to say the least. Right. When you do give him a place to live, and you know, and you give him a car, you know, you basically set him up. Is that just, you know, you being nice, or is Rocky, Big Rocky, telling you, hey, you better take care of my kid?
Absolutely not. Nothing. It was all because of me and him, our close personal friendship. Nothing motivated me other than that. And no ulterior motive. I mean, let's be honest. Back in 86 or 87, whenever that was, when we first connected, how in the world did I know he was going to not only become one of the undoubtedly top sports entertainers / professional wrestlers in the history of our profession, but arguably, like you said a while ago, the top movie star in the entire world of motion pictures right now. How did I know that? Here's a guy that was driving me around so I could get filthy drunk. You know, let's just be honest, you know. And we were just best of friends and still are to this day. Nothing's changed. But no, it was just a matter of, you know, becoming very close friends. And I'm proud of that more than anything.
When you look at, like, that time period, who knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, you don't know. I mean, you don't, like, Polynesia Pro closes. You go back to Memphis. Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, yeah, let's tell you. Let me tell you the truth. And if you ever ran into Dwayne or spoke to him, he would tell you this. I was the star then in that realm because, right. It was a territory. So anywhere in the Memphis area, I went. I was surrounded by fans, either wanting autographs, can I get your autograph or argue with me because I was a bad guy. You know, we see what you did to Lawler. He's going to get you, whatever. Dwayne was just with me as a friend. I was the star. And I'm not bragging on myself. It wasn't me. that was so powerful. It was the Memphis TV was really highly rated. So, you know, he went on TV and he was 14. So I was the star then. So that's the funny part. Who would have dreamed?
Now he pays it forward, right? He gave you a car after you let him have a car, right? I mean, that's an amazing story in and of itself.
He bought me a brand new Ford F-150 for Christmas in 2020 and made me an executive consultant on the show Young Rock, me along with another great guy, Chavo Guerrero, who was the physical consultant with the wrestlers, the actors that played wrestlers or the wrestlers that played actors. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I don't mean wrestlers that played actors, but in other words, I would help line up like local guys around Memphis when they were filming in Memphis. And then Chavo would like have one guy, who's a really good friend of mine named Brandon Ray, who played Adrian Adonis. Just a brief cameo, but he had the same body type or whatever, but he had to shave his mustache and beard that he has in real life. They put like a wig on to be Adrian Adonis, whatever. And I helped line up a lot of the guys. And then Chavo's job was to show them what to do as far as the physicality and the appearance wise. So, but yeah, getting back to what you said, yeah, Dwayne took care of me with the truck, but also put me as an executive consultant on that show. And I'm just very proud to have dealt with Chavo on it too, because he did a great job and he's a hell of a guy.
What'd you think about that? That's got to be pretty emotional, though. I mean, like, he's really paying it forward. He remembered all that stuff from back in the day.
Oh, yeah. We still stay in touch on a regular basis. We're very close. I mean, just because Young Rock is right now on, let's just say, hiatus, because you never know. Now that the Hollywood strike is over, it may be back. But yeah, we stay in touch, not just because of business, because we're family. I mean, we're not just best friends, we're family. And he's one of the few people in this world that I would literally die for. And I really would. And I really mean that.
When you look at Rock, where do you put him in the pantheon of wrestlers, like of all time? Like, where would you put him? Where would you rank him?
Oh, way up there. Here's the thing. Like, you have this, not you, but I'm saying, the world has this thing now. They ask everybody, what is your Mount Rushmore of
oh, yeah. Rushmore?
Okay. Yep. And I say, I can't rank people. This is number one. This is number two. And I certainly can't put four people. It's impossible. Impossible. Okay. But, and I won't rank people. This is number one. This is number two. But as far as the greatest of all time, one of the greatest in the ring, drew the most money, had the most notoriety, recognition, or whatever. Of course, he's in that group. I mean, a head and shoulders above 99.9% of the people that ever made our living in our profession. Dwayne, Stone Cold Steve Austin, which I don't know when this airs, but we're doing this today, December 18th. This is Stone Cold Steve Austin's birthday, so.
Oh, nice.
I already reached out to him today and happy birthday. We text back and forth. But whenever this airs, still, yeah. But Stone Cold is up there. Hulk Hogan is like the Beatles or the Elvis Presley of our profession. Yep. Nobody's in second place from Terry. He is number one, period. And everybody can agree on that. But everybody else, you know, it's in our business as a purpose and a place, but Hogan is the man. Dwayne, Stone Cold, Jerry the King Lawler, Macho Man Randy Savage, Dusty Rhodes, Undertaker, John Cena, Triple H. I mean, I know I'm leaving out a bunch, but I'm just saying that's Ric Flair, of course, drew money from ever and ever. Harley Race, and one guy that doesn't get mentioned a lot that should, in my opinion, is the Magnificent Morocco. To me, he's one of the best that ever stepped through the ropes.
Love Donnie Morocco. Yeah, he was the man.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Funny, I was looking at somebody on the X or Twitter, whatever it's called today, and they said, oh, is Hulk Hogan in your top 10? And I was like, top? Like, they were talking about all-time greats. I was like, is this guy nuts? I was like, is he in top? It's like, he's in the top one. Probably, you know, if you want to say top two, if you're going to say somebody, you know, random, but he's got to be the best. I mean, geez, Louise.
He drew money for a longer period of time on a regular basis for more than anybody in the history of our profession. And that's the end of discussion. There's no argument. There's no debate.
Yep.
And like I said, he's like Elvis Presley. When it comes to a rock and roll singer, nobody's in second place. When it comes to a group or a band, when it comes to the Beatles, nobody's in second place. And the truth is, I'm not even a huge Beatles fan. So I'm not saying it because I love them so much. But and that even shows even more how sincere I am. I don't dislike the Beatles. They just weren't my cup of tea. But you can't nobody argue and say they weren't the highest grossing for their time period musical act of their time, which is true, of all time, actually.
Yep. And the thing is with Hogan, too, would there even be the modern day WWE as we know it today, the billion-dollar company without Hogan? I doubt it.
Oh, I doubt it, too. He was the spearhead. I'm telling you. I mean, if he wasn't over like he was, I mean, you know, we couldn't have went worldwide, let alone nationwide, trying to just push somebody that didn't have that intangible thing that Hogan had. I mean, period. There wasn't no Dwayne back then. There wasn't no Stone Cold back then, whatever. Maybe Flair could have came and ran with it. I mean, I'm not saying he couldn't have. But at that time, he was with the Crockett's and the other places. So Hogan was the one that made it happen.
Man, like the WrestleMania, obviously, but pay-per-view in general, then the big four of the pay-per-views because of Hogan. I mean, he started pretty much everything, going nationwide, then going global. All Hogan. Yes, of course, Vince is a genius and it's his business, but without that top guy, without Hogan, none of that stuff is happening.
Right. I agree. And yeah, I mean, and people say, oh, Hogan's not that great in the ring. Bull. BS. Hogan was very good. Very good. And I've never seen anybody that brought up the audience like Hogan did when he started hulking up during the comeback. I mean, it reminds me very much of our thing in Memphis when Jerry King Lawler would pull that strap down.
Yes. People
go crazy. Same thing. And Hogan himself will tell you he learned more in Memphis than anywhere else he ever was. It was the first place he got a big push, a big break. And he worked with Lawler a lot and other people that really brought him along. And Hogan's very, very loyal to the Memphis territory, even though it doesn't exist anymore. But I'm saying in the day, he always talked well of it. And he's a great, great guy. And I hate it when people talk bad about Hogan because I think he's a hell of a guy.
Me too. Not that I know him, but I met him, like, you know, six times or whatever it was. But to me, always the best with the fans. He always gives everybody, you know, a few minutes to talk, even though there's a gigantic line of, you know, thousands right. of people. He gives everybody a long time a day. He gives them everybody their own little unique story of, you know, that he talks to them. So he's great. But not only that, even in the ring, I always said, like, oh, you know, this guy does a Canadian Destroyer. Hogan's finger point would get a bigger pop than somebody doing some crazy yes. move off the top rope.
I agree.
You were invested.
And by the way, so I don't want to shoot myself tonight when I go to bed, I left off Bret Hart in the list of the greats.
Oh, okay.
I left off Shawn Michaels in the list of the greats, which I shouldn't have. And that wasn't intentional. There's so many that are just really, you know, great. I'm sure by the time we close this out, I'd be five more that I forgot to mention, but. Yeah, you know, and I hope anybody that listens to this realizes it's not intentional, you know.
Yes. Hey, Roman Reigns eventually is going to be on that list, you know.
Rock's cousin. I've known him since he was a little kid. I used to be his dad's manager in Louisiana. I managed Sika in Louisiana and in Alabama. Which,
man, you really
those of you that don't realize, I'm not saying just in that state. I mean the territory. Back when there was one, you know.
Yeah, yep. Man, you've been in all the territories, right? You've been
with
the Fullers, Memphis, Kansas City, Polynesia Pro. Memphis probably the most famous one, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I never worked for the Crockett's. I never worked for World Class. I never worked for Vern. And I never worked for Pacific Northwest. But other than that, pretty much most places, you know. I never worked full-time for San Antonio, but when I was in Louisiana, I went down there for a few different appearances. When I was working in Kansas City, I went to St. Louis for appearances. When I say appearances, I mean like one-off bookings or, you know, short-term bookings or whatever. But yeah, I worked many of the territories. I never worked for the Crockett's, never worked for Eddie Graham. So I didn't work for all of them, but I worked for a whole lot of places.
Oh, yeah, you were in a lot of different spots. What made Memphis kind of stand out to you and make it such a unique territory? Because even going back and watching some of the stuff, it is amazing. What a territory.
Let me tell you something. We believed in what we were doing. We worked ourselves into a shoot, and the people believed in us. Because we don't believe in ourselves, they ain't gonna believe in us. And it was a wonderful place. People were invested in what we did. And we just, it was every week, live TV Saturday morning, Mid-South Coliseum every Monday night. Same towns every week. So ticket prices weren't real high because we were running every week in the same towns. And we had to keep the people into our product. We protected the business. And we had, like, Jerry the King Lawler. It was, I mean, ridiculously over. He was the big money guy. He was the attraction. Plus, we had Jackie Fargo, Sputnik Monroe, Eddie Marlin, Jeff Jarrett, Jerry Jarrett, Jimmy Hart, superstar Bill Dundee, Phil Hickerson, Rocky Johnson, King Cobra, Big Lou Winston, Jerry Bryant, Plowboy Frazier, Kamala, Coco Beware, Bobby Eaton, Dennis Condrey, Downtown Bruno, Tojo Yamamoto. I mean, again, I'm not even scratching the surface. You know, Don and Al Green, Dennis Hall, Tony Falk, Rip Rogers. I mean, everybody and anybody came through Memphis or was a mainstay in Memphis. I mean, that was just, it was just a great place. The Freebirds were here at one point. The Road Warriors were here. The Moondogs, everybody. It's very hard to name somebody that at that time and place didn't come through Memphis.
It's crazy. Hogan.
Macho Man. Hogan.
Macho Man, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. See how easy it is to forget? There were so many.
Jesse the Body.
Absolutely, Jesse the
Bam
Body.
Bam Bigelow. Yeah, yep.
Oh, Bam Bam. See what I mean? There's so many. I mean, we could just name names the rest of the evening. You know?
It's insane. Paul Heyman. Like, yeah, you just keep going.
Yeah, Paul Heyman. I'm Paul Orndorff.
Yeah, yep. It's crazy. Man, Memphis, yeah. It's just, I don't know, like, harnessed these guys and kind of, you know, prepared them to be big stars elsewhere. Like Sting and Warrior, for instance. Nobody else wanted them. They took them in and they developed them a little bit and then sent them off into the wild.
Right. True. Very true. And then a dear friend of mine, was one of the mainstays here too, Dutch Mantel, who has been in the hospital all week with a serious infection. Thank God he's coming out of it. He's okay. I just spoke to him yesterday. But he was a big player here in Memphis too, Dutch Mantel. And younger fans may know him as Zeb Coulter, who was with Jack Swagger. You know, the People.
Great gimmick, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that Downtown Bruno, the gimmick itself, though, where does that come from? I mean, are you just playing off your real stuff, or where does that come from?
Well, Bruno's my real name.
Well,
But let me tell you where that came from. And I hope I get to meet this guy one day, because I would love to tell him. It's a guy I never met in my life. Did you ever watch the TV show WKRP in Cincinnati?
Oh, I've seen it, yeah.
Yep. Okay. You know, the African-American guy that was a disc jockey on the show?
Yep.
Tim Reed is his real name, but on that show he played Venus Flytrap. So anyway, after that show ran its course, he went on another show called Simon and Simon, which was a detective show. And he played like a inner city, like cop type guy or a detective or whatever, called Downtown Brown. And I was just breaking in the business at that time. And Guido Tatry, who's one of the first guys that booked me, gave me this ridiculous name called Dr. Leonard Spazinski. I hated it. he thought people would, because back then there was like that Revenge of the Nerds movie out. He thought people would say spaz, 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 you know, which they didn't. It doesn't even roll off the tongue good. And I was watching that show one night, And here he comes. They called it. Here he is. Here he is now. Downtown Brown. I said, oh, my God. I'm going to be Downtown Bruno. Then I went to work for Dale Mann's territory out of, who ran Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia. I went to work for him. And he says, what's your name as a manager? And I just looked at him right in the eyes. I said, Downtown Bruno. He goes, sounds good to me. Wrote it down. That was it. So I was Downtown Bruno ever since. So that's where it came from. So Tim Reed, famous actor, if you get wind of this or it gets online or whatever, thank you. Because I became who I became because I loved the name that you had on that TV show.
I love that. Wow. What a story there. That's great. I love that. WTP in Cincinnati. Yeah, nice. Like that. So where does like the gimmick come from, so to speak? Are you like pulling from different guys? Did you idolize anybody? Did you look up to anybody in the business as far as a manager before you?
I mean, I observed the different managers to see what they were doing that I can incorporate into what I was doing. Not steal, but incorporate. You know, like
right.
I'm watching the guys that were there before me to figure out, oh, that's good how they did that. Oh, I see how he did that. You know, whatever. Oh, that's a good idea. Blah, blah, blah. And that's why I try to help young guys now, too. But on the other hand, I didn't want to try to be just like somebody else. And I didn't per se idolize anybody because I didn't know enough what was good or what was bad. I just had to figure it out on my own. And I'm not going to mention any names. I don't want to downgrade anybody. I'd stay positive on these interviews when I do them. Later, as I started learning the business more and more, I learned that some managers weren't very good. You know, they would talk about themselves instead of their guy. They would try to take away from the match, which you don't do. And after a while, I started to realize that. Now, I will say, I'm not going to say idolize or whatever, because I didn't do that per se, but some of the best, undoubtedly, Paul Heyman is fantastic in his way. Different style manager than me. I was more physical and more comedy. He's more of a serious guy. Fantastic. Fantastic. We had a big rivalry because when he came to Memphis, you know, we're both the same exact age, trying to get the same exact spot. So naturally we had a little heat with each other. That's over the bridge. We're very good friends, close friends. Cornette, I think, is one of the best, if not the best mouthpiece I've ever heard in my life. And tremendous intellect for the business. We both look at it the old way. And I really value most of what Cornette brings to the business. And when I say most, I'm not taking anything else away from him, whatever. This is not a criticism on Jim. And Jim, I hope you're listening to this or read this. The only thing that Jim had against him is not that he can help this. There's nothing he's done. He's a pretty big, you know, stout, good-sized guy, where I'm a little bitty guy.
Yep.
So Jim looked like he could whip your butt. And a lot of people, he probably could whip their butt. That's the only thing to me that if he was a smaller guy with the way he talks and he's the mama's boy, this, that, and the other, you know, because like when I ran my mouth, a little bitty guy, just all he whip his little butt. Cornette's a big, stocky guy, stout guy. So that's, and that, again, it's not a criticism of Jim. I'm just saying that's the only thing that I think that he lacked was he looked like he could whip your butt. You know, because he is a big, stout guy. But his talking, his intellect, his psychology of the bit is second to none. I can't say a damn thing against Jim. I love him. Heenan was great, of course. I mean, how can anybody say bad about Bobby Heenan? He was a tremendous manager. You know, Jimmy Hart, great friend of mine, great guy, great manager. Me and Jimmy have a lot more in common, you know, as far as the comedy type manager, but could get heat if we had to, you know.
Absolutely. Those are some of the all-time greats there, for sure.
Right, right. And like I said, there's a lot that I don't think we're good, but I'm not even going to mention them because why do I want to, you know, at this stage of my career in my life, I'm not going to put anybody down, you know?
Right. Yep. So how do you get into the WWF? I know it happens in the early 90s, around 1981, but how does that happen? Like, you're in the territories, you're going through the system, if you will, the territories start fading away. So how do you get into the WWF?
Well, yeah, I was working full-time for Memphis, of course. And by that stage in my career, I was in charge of the rings. Plus, I was a senior referee for the Memphis territory. Another dear friend of mine, Sid, left WCW and was starting with WWE F, but we say E now, even though it was F back then, you know.
Yeah.
But he got up there and they said, hey, we're looking for, you know, a manager. We need another manager up here. You know, at that time there was damn near every heel had his own manager. You know, they wanted another manager, and Sid mentioned my name and he asked them to take a look at me. And at that point I'd already been in business 11 or 12 years. And I always got along with everybody I ever worked with. And I never had an issue with anybody per se. So everybody's, oh yeah, we know Bruno. He's great. I was in Memphis with him. I was in Kansas City with him. I was in Louisiana, whatever. Everybody talked highly of me. So they brought me up to Worcester, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. And you know, and discussed with me and put me out in a dark match, a dark interview, this, that, and the other. And obviously impressed the powers that be, because I've, you know, been a part of that organization ever since.
Pretty long run you had there for sure. Where does the name come from, though? Where, how are you Harvey Wimpleman? You know what I mean? You're downtown Bruno, now you're Harvey Wimpleman? Where did that come
from? Well, because they wanted to make their own names and their own people. And I'm sure it had a lot to do with it, the fact that one of the WWF, WWE, whatever, legends was Bruno Sammartino. So, and I was brand new to that part of the country and whatnot. I guess they didn't want no confusion. So Gene Okerlund and Gorilla Monsoon came up with that. And I didn't care. As long as that paycheck said Bruno Lauer, I don't give a damn what they call me.
Did they ever explain like where that came from, the actual name Harvey Whippleman?
Well, they were just throwing names around. That was back about the time that Pee Wee Herman got in that issue with whatever. So they were going to call me Henry Herman, just to play off on the Pee Wee Herman thing.
Yep.
But then, you know, it's too obvious. And then once that fades out, we're just got a one-trick pony here. So I said, okay, how about a Harvey Herman? He said, how about Harvey Whipple? And then, okay, that's fine. I don't care what the hell you call me. And then we got to the ring, and then Oakland announced me as Harvey Whippleman, even though in the back they said Harvey Whipple. But at that point, it was too late. So that was that. And I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So the look is actually supposed to be like that Pee Wee Herman-esque suit?
First. Now, if you notice, after a while, that faded out. I was dressed differently, but that lasted a couple of years.
So funny how things can just happen. Like, we think it's like some mastermind thing. It's just like Mean Gene making a misstep or Gorilla joking around. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Right. Yeah, so it worked out. You know, hey, I couldn't be happier with it, how my life has turned out. I just hope it continues to be blessed as it is.
So I think it was Big Bully Busick first, right? And then Warlord, the two guys you managed, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're 100% correct. Big Bully Busick, then Warlord, then Sid, then Kamala, then John Gonzalez, then Quang, then Adam Bomb, then Mr. Hughes. I might not have this in chronological order, but just roughly. And then Bertha Faye, then Well Done, and Fabulous Moolah. Brooklyn Brawler I managed on and off for years. They always threw us together. We're best friends. And then I faded into, behind-the-scenes type individual, which I don't care.
When you look at WrestleMania 8 and you get to manage Sid, he's in the main event of WrestleMania 8. What's that like? Because, I mean, that's a major step up. I mean, not only WrestleMania, it's the main event and it's Hogan.
Oh, it's tremendous. And I loved every minute of it. And, you know, there's been a wives' tale for years that the finish was screwed up. It was not. That's exactly how it was supposed to come about. Period. End of story. Bam. nobody was late. Nobody shouldn't have kicked out when they did or kicked out when they shouldn't have. That's bullshit. It was exactly how it was supposed to be from A to Z.
Where does that story come from, though, that like, Papa Shango missed his cue and Sid had to kick out, even though it kind of doesn't jive well if you really think about that story. It doesn't kind of make sense.
It don't make sense. You know, I can't even say from the internet jockeys, because back then there wasn't that. I guess, I don't know, back then it was like dirt sheet people, I guess, somebody made it, because it wasn't true. It's not true. It's just not true.
I always figured, though, because Hogan is leaving, right, to do movies, and Sid was kind of going to be, you know, maybe anointed, not the next guy, but, you know, he's in the main event of WrestleMania. That's probably why, you know, let's not just beat Sid here. You know, let's keep Sid strong because Hogan's going to make movies.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't privy to all that, you know, high-level stuff. I just showed up, did what I was told, took what I was given, and moved on to the next day. So, but I mean, it makes sense what you're saying. But, yeah, but none of that, all that stuff is not true. It's just not true.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I never kind of bought into that. I was like, yeah, because it actually seems to work out pretty well. Because then, obviously, the DQ happens. Hogan's getting beat up, and Warrior makes his return, and the crowd goes nuts. So it's all kind of leading to Warrior's return as Hogan, is going to be on the sidelines for a little bit.
Right. And you know, I never had no problem with Warrior. A lot of people did. I didn't. He was always nice to me, so I can't say nothing against him.
When you're involved in that match, what's the experience like? Is that right? Because it seems like, wow, it's got to be pressure packed. You're in the main event of WrestleMania now.
Well, in a way, but I'd already been in the business over 10, 11, 12 years at the time. So it wasn't like, that it was like I was just thrown into something. I'll be truthful with you. It's more pressure when I go to like Ripley, Tennessee in front of 90 people. Because they're right on you, and everybody's looking at everything. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yep.
At WrestleMania, nobody's paying attention to me. As long as I don't screw up something, roundabout way, it's almost easier. Now, if I was involved in a real complicated scenario there, yeah, that'd be a lot of pressure. But I've done so many damn matches that by that time, I was like, I know what to do. You know, and I'm not saying it to be cocky by any means, but it's harder when it's like a small, enclosed little small auditorium. And you know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yeah. Everybody's focused on you because there's nothing else to really look at. WrestleMania, it's a gigantic place. Everybody's looking elsewhere, looking at Hogan, looking at Sid.
Right. Correct. Exactly. So, but yeah, don't get me wrong. I didn't take it for granted. I knew what I was supposed to do and when I was supposed to do it. But, like, once again, I wasn't like a new guy just came out of developmental, which didn't even exist back in those days, you know. I was already developed. Our day, developmental was working all the territories until you finally got the call to go to the WWF.
What was it like with Giant Gonzalez? You mentioned managing him. Did he like seem like, okay, this guy's going to be like a major player? Like, what did you think about Giant Gonzalez? Because obviously, Elegante, WCW didn't work out well. Obviously, the Atlanta Hawks career didn't work out well. Did you think he was kind of meant for the wrestling business or not? Because this is a basketball player.
He was an attraction. He wasn't great in the ring by any means. And everybody that was listening to this would know I was lying, you know, if I said it otherwise. He was not great in the ring. Great guy. I loved him very much. God bless his soul. But, he was an attraction. But he wasn't like Andre. Andre could perform. Gonzalez really couldn't. But, I mean, who would want to come see an 8-foot-tall guy? You know, I mean, once he put his boots on, he was literally like, if not 8 foot, right at 8 foot tall. So, I mean, I got along tremendously with him. And we were in a lot of main events with Savage and Undertaker. Never had that run with Hogan, which I wish we would have, but just timing didn't work out. But that would have been wonderful. That right there. Because Hogan could have made him look like Shawn Michaels. You know what I mean? Because Hogan knew how to do that. Get the most out of the least. But the cards didn't fall that way, unfortunately.
Would that have been the summer of 93, I guess, before Hogan left? Because I remember there's that infamous picture in my house show where Hogan and him have the stare down. Obviously, he's looking down at Hogan, but they have that infamous stare down that people got that awesome picture of.
You know, I swear to God, I'm the worst at dates. I'd be lying if I told you, oh, yeah, 93, 94. I don't know. I mean, I barely remember what I had for breakfast. You know, how about that? I don't know. I'm bad. I know the year I broke in, and I was bad about remembering my own mama's birthday. My aunt used to have to call me. Bruno, you know mama's birthday is coming up. I have to have it all wrote down now. You know, mama's not with us no more, but I got where I had to write everything down. I can't remember dates. I'm the world's worst on that. Oh, I'm surprised my dadgum electricity's on here in my house because I'd forget to pay the bill, you know. If I get a bill in the mail.
I hate when that happens because then the bill comes the second time. You're like, wait, didn't I pay this? And it's like double. You're like, oh, maybe I didn't pay it. I guess I forgot.
Right.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. Yeah.
But I'm exaggerating. Oh, yeah. I've never done that. But I'm saying I could. You know, I can't keep up with stuff like that.
I believe it was the summer of 93 with Hogan and him, but that would have been pretty cool. Just as like Hogan versus a monster. That was like the tried and true thing of the 80s.
Right.
Hogan versus Andre, Hogan versus Bundy, Hogan versus Stud. I mean, Hogan versus a monster.
Yeah, then they had to come along with these guys that were talented. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, this and that. Oh, God, why'd they do that?
Yeah, that's ruined it. Damn it. When you look at it, too, with Gonzalez, you're short and he's so tall. It just made it look even cooler, the dynamic, because it made him look, right. Which is, you didn't really need to do it, but it made him look even taller, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I was at a signing in Florence, Alabama about 6 months ago. You ain't going to believe this. But I swear to God, I'm not lying. Guy came over to my table. Hey, can I get your autograph? This, that, and the other. And I had a picture with me and Gonzalez on the table and some other ones, you know. He goes, how did he wrestle with them stilts on? Before I could even respond, the guy that sponsored me to be there said, almost cursed him out. I mean, that was the most stupidest thing I ever heard in my life.
Well, the guy's nuts. He never saw Giant Gonzalez.
Stilts on. You know how you've seen the circus performers with stilts, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Guy like my side, you know, how could he even think this? It was the most, oh, my God. I mean, that's off the subject. I just had to bring it up because
that's weird.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Tell that guy when he gets back from Mars, give us a call, right? I mean, geez.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him what color was the sky in the world he lives in, you know?
Yeah. Wow, that's nutty. So I guess he never heard of Giant Gonzalez before. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What did you think of that outfit, though? Did you think that was a terrible, idea for an outfit?
No, not really. I thought it was attractive. I say attractive. I don't mean like, oh, you know. But I mean, it drew attention. Obviously, you're mentioning it 30 years later. So I remember, it's funny about that outfit. We were up in Nova Scotia for the company, and Jack Tunney was running the towns up there. We were, I think it was... I'm just going to say these towns. It might not have been, but I think it was Moncton and Halifax. Moncton was like the afternoon show, and Halifax was the evening show. So Jack Tunney had a van drive us from town A to town B, and we were all in this van. Me, Gonzalez, Jim Duggan, Ludwig Borga, Virgil, and my close friend, Brooklyn Brawler. And we were driving on these Canadian hills or whatever, and Duggan says, we all had to pull over and somebody had to pee or something. And Duggan says, and we're all still in our outfits because we're going to the next town, you know, so just, you know, put jackets on or whatever, but you know, we didn't change. Duggan said, hey, let's have Gonzalez run up on the top of that hill. Next time a car comes by, let him come running out with his arms up. Like Bigfoot was.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, hell no, one of these damn Canadians just came back from moose hunting and might kill him. I said, no.
Oh, my God. He actually, with that outfit on and how tall he is, I think everyone would buy it a second that he looked like Bigfoot.
But, I mean, I was scared of somebody. I thought it would have been funny, but I was afraid one of them Canadians might, you know, like I said, up in that area.
Shot at him.
Moose hunting or whatever, shot him and killed him. How are we going to explain that to Vince?
Hey, Vince, we were just ribbing, and we thought he'd be a good Bigfoot. Well, one of those hunters here in Canada didn't think he, you know, didn't like Bigfoot roaming around.
Yeah, they killed him. They shot him dead, Vince, but we saved the suit, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to the guy not that long ago who made the suit, or I guess it was made the idea of the suit, and he's like, yeah, it came out a little bit differently than we had anticipated. I don't know why. Maybe because they added, like, the airbrushed muscles, I guess. I don't know what his thinking was, but obviously just over the top, WWF style.
Yeah, but I loved it. I had nothing against the suit. I thought it was great.
Hey, got an action figure out of it, too, so that's not bad back in the day. He got a Hasbro back in the day.
Yeah, so maybe the multi-thousandaire that I am.
Yeah, there you go. When you look at, like, the WWF run and you look at some of the things you did, were you the cameraman at King of the Ring 1993 that took the photo of Hogan and it blew up in his face? Was that you?
Yeah, it was me. And my dumbass, I gave that jacket away that I wore that day and that hat because I didn't know this convention thing was ever going to become a thing. I mean, somebody would have wanted that. I don't even have it no more. Yeah, that was me. That was sure enough me.
What was that all about? Like the actual look, though, because it looked ridiculous. Like the actual getup.
Well, they just didn't want nobody to know it was me, because it wasn't a deal to put heat on Harvey Whippleman. It was a deal for Yokozuna to, you know, win the championship. But the reason they had me do it, not just some, you know, random person, because they knew, you know, I knew how to do it, finish properly, and I knew how to ad lib. And me and Hogan already figured it out that somehow that flash thing didn't go off or malfunctioned or whatever. We are, you know, I don't even remember what the plan B was now because we didn't need it. But we had a plan B. But it was just some random person like, hey, cameraman Johnny, come here. We're going to have you do this. They would have maybe screwed it up. So that's why it was me. But again, why I was in that ridiculous get up, because it wasn't a deal to get heat on me. You know, like I said, so.
So it was never supposed to be a reveal like, oh, it was Dr. Harvey Wimpleman.
Right, because there was no payoff to that. It was just strictly because they knew I would do it right. And I'm not bragging about myself, but I'm just being truthful. I've been in, at that point, in a business 15 years or whatever. So they knew I could, you know, do it properly.
That was pretty shocking. It led to the end of Hulkamania for about 9 or 10 years there in the WWF.
I know. So I guess since it was part of the profession, I guess I can take pride in that.
Yeah, that was a big spot, a huge spot. Yeah. As far as that's concerned, because it blinded Hulk, and then obviously Yoko gets the win, and he wins the title back, and then, you know, the end of Hulkamania.
Right. And the funny thing is, all those Japanese photographers that were at ringside for that, they were furious. They hated
it. Really?
Yes, because they thought it made them look bad. They're like, I was one of them or something, you know?
So they weren't smart enough.
Yeah, that Jimmy Suzuki was freaking furious.
Wow, so nobody told him, like, hey, you know, one of you guys isn't one of you guys, and they're going to jump up on the apron. Nothing, none of that.
No, thank God none of them pulled me off the apron or something.
Yeah, that's true. What if they thought, like, oh, this guy went rogue. We got to get him down, yeah.
Right. But nobody was smart enough.
Did you enjoy the time with Bertha Faye and having the relationship, or did you not like that?
No. That's an easy answer, no.
Why?
Well, here's the thing. Like I told you a while ago, I don't like to downgrade anybody, especially since she's no longer with us. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll put it like this as diplomatically as I can. I don't think anybody could get mad at me for saying this. We just didn't get along. We had different ways of looking at things. Let's just put it like that. You know, God bless her. Hope she's resting in peace. I hate what happened to her. I certainly don't wish that on her or anybody else, whether I like him or I don't like him. But it happened. But yeah, I can't sit here and lie. Oh, it's about to fail. We weren't friends. We did not get along. I'm sorry. God bless her.
When you look at your run, there's so many different things in WWF that, like, stick out, like WrestleMania 8, like we said, WrestleMania 9, like we said, Bertha Faye. Even though you may not have liked it, everybody kind of remembers it. It was just unique. You and Finkel having, like, your little feud there, just different things. They always kind of kept you around and on TV and doing something. You were kind of the heat magnet, if you will.
Yeah, because they knew I was reliable, and I still am. You know, I'm I don't get into this too much, but yeah, I you know, still have a certain arrangement with WWE, and I'm very loyal to them, and I'll leave it at that. But yeah, they've always kept me around because they knew I was reliable. They knew I was loyal. I've been through a hell of a lot, and I always stay loyal, and I always will. You know, there's certain people and certain organizations that gave me my life. Jerry King Lawler, Rocky Johnson, Sid, and WWE. Dwayne, at this point in my life. You know, these are people that I love very much, and an organization that I love very much. And, you know, I feel very blessed to have that list of things in my life.
And to help be employed by one company for over 30 years kind of shows your, you know, shows your value, shows your worth. Like, oh my God, like being in a company that long period, especially in the wrestling business, says a lot about you.
Well, I thank you. And we talked about Howard Finkel, a dear friend of mine, broke my heart when we lost him. Very, very great guy. God bless him. One in a million. One in a million. He's the one that called me to come up to my first initial meeting WWE. WWE, whatever. But yeah, Howard, you know, great guy. We became very close friends.
I love that he, like, they put him in wrestling matches. Obviously, you know, he's not a trained wrestler. You were probably trained. You know, like, you know what you're doing there. But I love that they put him out there and did it. A little bit of comedy, obviously.
Oh, yeah. But I'm going to tell you, being in the ring with him, I've been in easier street fights. I mean, because, you know, like you said, he wasn't trained. Oh, my God. It was not easy. I think it was a rib on both of us at some point. You know, but, hey, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
So he wasn't as smooth as some of the other guys you were in there with.
Well, exactly. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm Jerry King Lawler or that young Shawn Michaels. I'm not exactly, you know, great. But, I mean, at least I knew my limitations. Poor old Howard, he didn't have any skill at all. That's not an insult to him. It just wasn't his thing. You know, it's like asking me to fix your transmission. I don't know how to fix a transmission. We'll get in there and do it anyway. You know, same thing, basically.
Right. He's the greatest announcer of all time. So, I mean, he's not necessarily out there needing to wrestle. Yeah, that's for sure.
Oh, my God, isn't he not? And new Intercontinental Champion. Man, it brings, you know, a tear to a glass eye, man.
When somebody brings up Hervina to you and says, hey, former WWF Women's Champion, do you laugh, you know, laugh all the way to the bank kind of thing? Or do you say, like, I was kind of, I don't know if I like that.
No, it was fine with me. I would say, hey, that's right. That was me, by God. Yeah, I don't care. Hey, it don't bother me one little bit. Hey, that's the business. I don't have one negative thing to say about that. Except the match itself sucked.
You know, yeah.
But I mean, hey, it put me in the, let's say this. I can honestly say, I was the WWE champion for one day. I don't have to, you know, expound on it, you know, and I wouldn't be lying.
Yep,
I was champion of the world for one day.
That is true. Like, you know, when you're looking at the resume, you could put, hey, Harvey Wimpleman, WWF champion in there. So, yeah, that's good for the old resume.
You're damn right. You're damn right. And that and $2.54 will get me a gallon of gas down at the corner. But still, you know.
As we wind it down here, we head towards the finish. I got to ask this because it always gets brought up with so many different people. And you've been there for 32 years, whatever it is. I mean, so many years, going to be 33 years. Do you ever think about the WWE Hall of Fame? Do you think you should be in? Do you want to be in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to be? If anybody said they didn't, they'd be lying. That's called sour grapes. I don't want to be in. I don't want to be in. No, of course. Should I be? That's not for me to say. Are there people in there that I don't agree with? That's not for me to say, or I won't say. But, hey, they give me a call, tell me to come, I'll be there. You know, the greatest honor in my career, as far as accolades, not making a living. The honor is making a living. But, I mean, that plaque I showed you at the beginning, Memphis Hall of Fame, that was my highest accolade. I would love to put the WWE Hall of Fame plaque right next to that here on my desk. Sure. I would consider it a tremendous honor, and I would feel very proud. Should I be? It's not for me to say, once again. And I say God bless everybody that's in it. And maybe one day they done used everybody else up, and they'll call me up. Who knows? If they do, great. If not, I'm still very loyal to the organization. And let's just see what happens. But I would love to stand up there so I could just tell everybody from the Hall of Fame stage the catchphrase that made me a living for years and years. It's like Mama says, it bees that way sometimes.
Yes, love that that expression. And I love that Sid used to use it too. I mean, I just thought that was awesome. Obviously, a little bit of homage to you, his buddy.
It was. And it meant a lot to me, yeah. And I can't lie. I got to give credit. I got that from a man I managed in Louisiana back in the early 80s, Iceman King Parsons.
Oh, yeah.
He used to use it. Because back then, what was said in Louisiana or Dallas, the places he worked, you didn't hear it in Memphis. Again, like we said, it was territories. So when I came back to Memphis and used it, it was mine.
Yep.
You know, even though I got it from him, and I acknowledge that. Great guy. God bless him. I mean, he's still living, I'm saying, but God bless him as a person.
Yep.
But, yeah, I got that from Iceman. I ain't gonna lie. But I made it my own in Memphis.
What's next for you? What do you got coming up down the pike?
Hey, I just want to continue to make a living in my chosen profession, and I want to continue to serve my community here in Walls, Mississippi. I still make appearances at Pro Wrestling Mid-South about every other month up in Northwest Tennessee and in West Tennessee too, Jackson, Tennessee. And just, you know, people call me to come to a convention or a signing or whatever, and things come, and you know, if I feel like it's something I want to do, I go. You know, there's people there I like to see, and if the you know, situation warrants, I'll be glad to go. And as far as what else, in 2025, I have to run for re-election on the Board of Aldermen for my seat here in Walls, Mississippi, and I hope everybody votes for me. I'll probably be out begging for campaign contributions. I might reach out to you to put it out online too, so I can get people to help me buy signs and t-shirts and whatnot. And basically that's it. If anybody's interested in bringing me to an event or whatever, I have a good friend of mine. I have no social media, none.
Oh, okay.
A good friend of mine that's got a Facebook page called Downtown Bruno Bookings and Appearances. So if anybody would like me to come to an event or whatever, you can reach out to him. His name is Daniel Matthews, who runs Net Pro Studios out of Kingsport, Tennessee. But that's how you can reach me. And if you want me to come to a event or whatever, he's my go-to guy. We'll work it out if y'all want me to. And if it's good for both of us, I'd love to do it. So holler. Like my good friend Teddy Long used to say.
All right. Awesome. Bruno, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Hey, I enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing you in next time I'm up your way, my dear friend. You're a good guy, and I hope this draws record ratings.
Yes. Awesome, and I hope to see you up here in the Northeast very soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you, and God bless everybody.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.